This summer, as we move through the months of July and August, we are thinking about what it takes to be a community of faith that makes healthy disciples, that builds community by being healthy and wanting to grow in our faith together. So we're moving through some spiritual disciplines, some exercises or some practices that help us to grow in our faith. Last week, the youth helped us think about how acts of service and how serving God and neighbor can help us grow in our faith. And this week we're tackling something that I'm not very good at and don't like to practice very much, but that's why they call it practice, and it's meditation. And so as we think about the spiritual discipline of meditation and what it looks like to center ourselves before God, to fill ourselves up, to take time to listen for that still small voice, I want to read to you from the Gospel of Luke, where we see Jesus practice meditation himself. Hear these words from the Gospel. As the sun was setting, all those who had any who were sick with various kinds of diseases brought them to him. They brought them to Jesus. And he laid his hands on each of them and cured them. Demons also came out of many, shouting, "You are the Son of God!" But he rebuked them and would not allow them to speak, because they knew that he was the Messiah. At daybreak he departed, and he went to a deserted place. And the crowds were looking for him, and when they reached him, they wanted to prevent him from leaving them. But he said to them, "I must proclaim the good news of the kingdom of God to the other cities also, for I was sent for this purpose." You can imagine Jesus engaged in his ministry in this time and place where he's being inundated or bombarded or hit from all sides by all these people who are sick, who are diseased, who are malnourished, who need his help, his healing, his power, his presence. And you can imagine Jesus feeling overwhelmed by all this, that even though he is the Son of God and the Messiah and the one whom has been sent by God to be the Savior of the world, he's getting hit from all sides. And so you can imagine how overwhelmed he was feeling. Perhaps at the end of the day, he was also feeling a little distracted, a little unsure of what he needed to do next or where he was going or who was talking to him or who's on first base and what's on second base and where's third base again. And so Jesus himself goes up on the mountain and he goes away to a deserted place to pray, to center himself, to meditate, to take time to be with God. I resonate with this story from the Gospel of Luke because I know that I am often a distracted person. I know that I am often bombarded with things that hit me from every angle, whether it's at home or at work or in my parenting or in my ministry out in the community. Sunday mornings are probably the worst time of the week for me to be a little overwhelmed and distracted because there's so many people and I get to talk to you all and I get to be in ministry with you and I get to preach and I get to sing and I get to pray and oh my gosh, and what do I need to do next? Can you imagine? You probably can. You've met me. I think we all live in this distracted world, don't we? In a world where we have smartphones, we can get Facebook notifications and text messages and emails that bing up on our phone. And then no matter what we were doing in that moment, suddenly we're distracted into looking at what's going on text-wise. If we're driving down the road, we're bombarded with ads, with decisions that we need to make, with crazy drivers who want to do something a little dangerous, somebody in the car trying to talk to us or intercepting a phone call. We live in a distracted world. It's hard to even go a few minutes without being interrupted by someone or something. It's hard to go a whole day without being overwhelmed or without having a few moments of silence and solitude to just be by yourself and with God. Does that ever happen to you? Yeah, we don't have a lot of silence and solitude in our world. One way that my husband Joel and I get silence and solitude is actually by going to the gym to exercise. And that's a place where we can kind of get away from our work and our house and be together, but also be in our own little world and take care of ourselves and body and mind and spirit. For me, it's a place where I like to go to a class and exercise that way. My husband Joel likes to get on the elliptical and move his body that way. And one day I finished my yoga class and I came out to the exercise floor where all the cardio machines are, and I found Joel, and he had his earbuds in and was listening to a podcast on his phone, and then the TV on the elliptical machine was also playing, and he had brought a magazine along to read as well. And I thought, this is the space for the introvert to get his silence and his solitude and try to cram it all in to the workout that he's going to do in this hour of time. This is his glory moment, right? Right. But even in this time and space where we want to be apart, where we want to have some time to ourselves, even the introvert gets distracted with all these three different mediums of how he's trying to feed himself and take care of himself, right? We live in a busy world that can, and it can be hard to put any of our attention on God. God is always sending us notifications, always buzzing in and trying to intercede and work in our lives. But if we don't pay attention, we might miss it. And we have a hard time paying attention when we're distracted, when we're overwhelmed. So today we're talking about meditation. Meditation as a spiritual practice that helps us as people, everyday people who have everyday problems like being distracted and overwhelmed, calm it down, center ourselves in, and focus. Focus on God, the one who gives us life, the one who loves us, and the one who is always walking with us. Meditation is an ancient practice that's been around hundreds of years, and people have always tried to meditate, to center themselves on God. There were folks who lived out in the desert in the early centuries who were the desert mothers and fathers who lived in monasteries, and they spent their whole days meditating, praying, in silence and in solitude. There are people now here today who practice meditation as a spiritual discipline, and I'm one of those persons who try to meditate, but I have a confession to make, y'all. I'm not very good at it. I'm not very good at meditation. My image for meditation is like sitting on the floor, crisscross applesauce, with my hands out like this and my eyes closed. Waiting. Waiting. Is anybody out there? Be still and know that I am God. Oh, right. Okay, I'm still. I'm knowing that you're God. And I'm bored. Okay, moving on. You know what? I didn't think about doing that in a dress when I was getting dressed this morning. The scriptures tell us to be still and know that God is God. And we want to follow the example of Jesus himself, who went out and to a deserted place and prayed and meditated. And we want to do this so that we can grow our faith, so that we can listen to God, so that we can intercept and intercede the grace that is offered to us. But in the moments when I'm meditating, I find that I get distracted. Do you ever find that? You get distracted when you're praying or meditating or trying to be contemplative. I wonder if the same grace that Jesus received when he was away in a deserted place up on a mountain centered him so that he could go back and be in ministry with all the people who had all the demands and needs and wants and hopes and dreams that they wanted to share with him. I wonder if that time filled him up, if it bolstered him enough that he knew he could go back and face whatever was coming. I think ultimately that is the point of meditation, that we want to center ourselves in, we want to draw near to God, we want to take some time to be with the one who created us, who loves us, and who is always walking with us, so that we can remember how strong we are, so that we can remember that we are stronger with God by our side, so that we won't get distracted by the things that take us away from God's grace and God's love, but that we'll always be focused on that. I was on an airplane recently, and I was listening to the stewardess and the steward give out the instructions for the safety portion of the flight, where we're taxiing out on the runway, and they're showing us how the seatbelts work and how the oxygen masks will drop down if the cabin pressure changes. And the instruction that the steward and the stewardess gave to us was that we should put on our own oxygen masks, before helping anyone else put on their oxygen masks. And I think that lesson carries over to spiritual disciplines. I think spiritual disciplines are the things that breathe new life into us in body and mind and spirit. And it's important to take care of our own needs, including our own spiritual needs, before we can take care of others, before we can focus on other people's needs and wants. It's important to sit and breathe deeply in and of the presence of God before we can exhale anything that is life-giving to others. And so that's what we saw Jesus do when he went up and took time apart, took time away from the crowds. He sat and he breathed in deeply of the presence of God so that he could have the strength and the life-giving energy that he needed to share with others. We want to follow his example. We want to follow in his footsteps. And so that's why we have this thing called meditation as a spiritual discipline. I remember when I was 21 years old, I spent a whole summer in ministry in the city of Detroit. I was working for a program called the Mercy Education Project, and it was for young Latina girls, to come and continue their education through the summer so that there wasn't the summer slide that we hear about in academics and young children. And I was a Spanish major in college, and so I enjoyed this program very much because I got to speak Spanish with the young girls, and they got to learn from me and work alongside me on their reading and on their math and their spelling and things like that. And the main part of the internship program was to be in ministry in the inner city Monday through Friday, and then on the weekends we spent time discerning who we are, who we're called to be, and what kind of ministry might be taking shape in our life. It was a pivotal summer for me, one in which I was discerning my call to ordain ministry in the United Methodist Church. And at the end of the summer, our leaders, some of the pastors in the area, took us on a retreat to a Catholic retreat center near Monroe, Michigan. It was nice to be able to get out of the city and spend some time away with my friends and continue to build those relationships. And on the last day of the retreat, we were challenged to spend 8 hours in silence. 8 whole hours, you guys, in silence. I almost died. I was 21 years old, and at that time, even more of an extrovert than I am now. And I thought to myself, quickly doing the math, 8 hours in silence, that's 480 minutes. That's 28,800 seconds of silence. On the last day of the retreat, after breakfast, we entered into this covenant where we wouldn't talk to one another, and they gave us a bottle of water, and they gave us a clean new notebook and a nice pen and a map of the retreat center, and they sent us out. We could go anywhere we wanted and spend the time doing anything that we wanted as long as we were silent. There was a labyrinth, a prayer walk that we could walk around. There was a nice garden with a fountain that we could sit near and observe. There were trails upon trails and miles upon miles of forest that we could walk. And we packed our lunch and we took it and with our notebook and our bottle of water, and we went out into the retreat center to be silent, to pray, to listen, to journal, to be with God and with creation. So I thought, okay, I can do this. I can do this. No problem. No problem. So I left my things on a bench and I went for a walk in the woods and I was silent and I was listening to the birds and to the frogs and the cicadas and all that. And that was very lovely and nice. And I thought, God is here. This is good. This is good. And I finished my first walk through the forest, and I turned around and I came back to my belongings and I sat and I tried to be silent, you know, doing one of those crisscross applesauce kind of things where I'm waiting and I'm waiting. And I looked at my watch, wondering how much time had gone by and where everyone else was and what they were up to, and it had been 21 minutes. And I thought, oh boy, it's going to be a long day. It's going to be a long day for me. After those 21 minutes, I tried to go back into the rhythms in my head. I tried to write down my prayers. I tried to think of people in my life that I knew needed prayers, prayed for them. I thought about the experience I had had with the Mercy Education Project and the people I had met and the mentors who had taken me under their wing, and I gave God thanks for them. And I checked my watch again. Okay, it's been 26 minutes. Great, 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 great. After a while, I started to get this sense that maybe I was doing it wrong. Maybe I was not a person who knew how to be spiritual. Maybe I was a person that didn't like to be by themselves, and I was worried that I didn't have anything meaningful to say to God, or that God wasn't speaking to me, or that this journal somehow wasn't going to do it for me. And I was afraid, and I started to feel guilty. I started wondering, what's wrong with me that I can't do this, even just for a few moments? Am I inadequate in some way? And I turned into my Bible that I had brought with me, and I flipped to a familiar passage that I had bookmarked and highlighted, and it said, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness." And all of a sudden, something clicked in my head. Perhaps it was the voice of God speaking to me. And I realized that this day of silence, that this practice of meditation, was a means for me to experience God's grace. That grace that is sufficient for me despite my weaknesses, despite my imperfections, despite the things that I know how to do and don't know how to do, and despite the things that I worry about. That this means of grace is something that we can receive in any moment, in any place, in any time. I think that same means of grace is what Jesus was tapping into when he went up onto the mountainside to be away from the crowds, to have a moment of silence and solitude. He was leaning into that grace that he knew his God in heaven, his parent, was offering him. He was leaning in to the grace that he would need when he went back down the mountain to be where the people were. The people with the wants and needs, the desires, the distractions, the hopes and the dreams. He was leaning into that grace and that source of power and truth that he knew was bigger than himself. That same grace is the grace that I want and need and crave each and every day. And so I continue to practice this contemplation, this meditation, this silence, this thing, because I know that I need to center myself, to focus on God and the gifts that God is giving me each and every day through God's grace and God's love. I know that you all also want to lean in to that grace. You want to receive it. You want to share it. You want to open your heart up to it so that you can experience it more and more each day. And so today, as we think about this exercise of meditation and contemplation, I want to offer you something that a woman named Elaine Heath taught me and wrote about in one of her books. Elaine Heath is a professor of United Methodist history and polity and theology. And for a while, she was teaching in Texas, and then she went to Duke Divinity School, and now she's moved on from there. But her contemplative stance is a four-step process, and she calls it a palms-up meditation, because as you meditate, one stance or posture that you can take is to hold your palms up. If our fists are clenched, we might not be open and ready to receive what God is offering us in that moment. But if our palms are open, that signals that we are more ready, more receptive. So she calls it a palms up meditation, and it has four steps. She says, first, show up. Show up for yourself. Take the time to be quiet, to be still, to be alone. It's worth it to show up for yourself, because then you'll be better able to show up for others. The second step is to pay attention. Simply pay attention to what's going on in your own mind, in your own body, in your own spirit at that time and in that place. Try to let go of the things that are distracting you, the things that are worrying you, the things that you need to be doing. The third step is cooperate with God. Cooperating with God doesn't necessarily mean cooperating in the sense that we think it does. It's more like be open and receptive to the love and grace that God is giving you. Don't worry about whether you're doing it right or wrong. Don't worry if you're getting everything perfect or not, but simply cooperate with the grace and the love that is being offered to you as a gift. And finally, fourth is release the outcome. After even 30 seconds of meditation, or perhaps a little longer, we may not know what the outcome is of that time. But we know that it is time well spent, because it is time being nurtured in our relationship with God. I have a video that I want to show you where Dr. Elaine Heath walks us through this process in her own words. And so we're going to watch that, and then we're going to practice it together.
So here's what I think of in terms of living in a contemplative stance in the world. There are four parts to it. The first part is showing up. You show up to yourself, what's going on inside, where you are. You show up to God. What's God up to? What's God calling me to? How am I sensing God today? And you show up to your neighborhood. What's going on around me? These people that I live with, the people that are on the street where I live, the people where I work, what's going on there? So showing up, really noticing, paying attention. So that's the second part, paying attention. You show up, you pay attention, especially to where you sense God is saying something, inviting you toward something, reaching out to you in some way, not only showing up to you, but showing up to your neighborhood, to your house, to your church, to where you work. Show up, you pay attention, and you listen for God's invitation to be involved in some way. And you hear God, or maybe you don't hear God internally, maybe you sense something, or maybe the guidance comes to you in some other way. It's kind of unique for each person. But this invitation, this tug to get involved somehow. So you get involved. And then the last part of the contemplative stance is really tough for Americans, because we like to be in control of everything. But it is to release the outcome. You show up, you pay attention, you cooperate with God, and you release the outcome. So you love your neighbor not to get something out of them or to make them join your church or whatever, but you love your neighbor and you release the outcome, because God loves us and releases the outcome. This is fundamentally the way Jesus lived. And it's so liberating. So to live in this contemplative orientation, it's a practice of deep listening, deep hospitality. You're going to notice the other. You're going to make space for hospitality toward God. I'm going to pay attention to what God is doing and make room in my life, and my life is actually going to now follow what God is up to. And a deep trust. I'm going to release the outcome and trust that God's goodness is being worked out in this, even if I don't see the end result for what I'm doing. This way of life is inherently missional. It's the life of a sent out one. That's what a missional person is, a sent out one. A missional community is a sent out community. And this contemplative stance can be cultivated on an individual basis, and as a community of faith, we can live this way.
So I think there's a lot of wisdom in this four-step process, and it might be new to you, it might be a little unfamiliar or uncomfortable, but I want to challenge you today to do it with me. We don't do new or hard things alone, and we do them in the context of a Christian community where we want to take steps and grow in our faith and in our relationships with God. So we're going to do this together today. I want to invite you to sit right where you are. We're going to do this for 45 seconds, you guys. I believe in you. I do. I believe in you. Sit right where you are. Put your feet flat on the floor and turn your palms up and open. We're going to do the palms up meditation that Dr. Heath just taught us. And we're going to do it together. In this moment, we're showing up for ourselves. We're showing up for God, and we're showing up for the people who are next to us. We're showing up for the people who are out in our Rochester community, those who need to know grace and love and who aren't yet here, those who need to be served by the ministries and programs of our church. We're going to take this time in silence and in solitude for ourselves, for God, and for our neighbors. I'm going to invite you now to take a deep breath in through your nose and to let the air out through your mouth. Will you pray with me? God of love, you are great. You are the one who gave us life, who shares with us love, and who sustains us each and every day on the good days and the bad. You are the one who offers us grace upon grace, who loves us with such great unconditional understanding that we know we can lean into you with whatever is going on in our lives, with whatever we've got facing us, in our mind or our body or our spirit. We know in the stillness and in the silence, when we are by ourselves, we are never fully alone because we are in your presence. And so today, oh God, I ask that your presence would greet each person here, that they might be able to feel your love in a palpable way, that with every breath they breathe in and breathe out, they might receive the gift of your Spirit, the gift of new life flowing in them, so that each person here, each man and woman and child might be stronger because of this hour of worship, because of this time spent practicing life with you. Oh God, we know that as you care for us, you give us strength so that we can care for ourselves and care for others. And so today, as we show up and we pay attention, we listen for the ways that you're calling us to serve. Perhaps for the folks here at St. Paul's, that call would come in the way of Vacation Bible School, in showing kids how fun faith can be, how awesome it is to be together and to learn and grow. Perhaps for others, it's going out and using their hands and feet to spread your love in one of our community neighborhood ministries and programs, whether that's Baldwin Center or the food pantry or Neighborhood House or Habitat or Cass Community Social Services. We know, oh God, that there are lots of needs to be met and that you have made us unique, so that we can respond to your grace and meet those needs ourselves. Now, O God, as we take our open palms and we bring them together, we close our prayer knowing that you have heard these words spoken, and we release the outcome into your hands. Send us forth to serve in your Son's holy name. Amen.